go now, baby. Right back into the action for another day of the week. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Before You Bet, Aaron, live right now on the Covers YouTube and X channels. If you're watching on YouTube right now or watching the replay later on in the day, make sure you smash that like button right down there. Make sure you smash that subscribe button as well. A lot of great content to find here on the Covers YouTube channel. So I came on the show yesterday bragging a little bit, maybe a little bit of a victory lap after a great day of betting on Monday. So how do we follow that up? Well, we gave it right back there yesterday. Rough night in Major League Baseball. So we're going to be looking to bounce back here today. Six total bets in Major Leagues. That will be in the second half of the show, as well as taking a look at the Tour Championship for the PGA. Neil Parker will be along with some of his best bets there in the second half of the show. But like I've been saying all week, this is a football first show now right through the Super Bowl. And I'm very excited to be bringing in my next guest who will be with us each and every Wednesday right through the Super Bowl. There's our guy, John Middlecoff. So a little bit of background, John. Like any sports content company, whether it be betting or just general sports, you start planning for football season in the spring, early summer at the absolute latest. And they came to me, my boss, and said, Joe, who's somebody in the media that you love, that you would love to get in the mix on the show once a week? And it was you, John Middlecoff. If you don't know who John is, he is a host of the Three and Out podcast. He is a former scout with the Philadelphia Eagles. And you might have seen him doing spots with Colin Cowherd. That's where I discovered him. A lot of good takes, not often on the fence, brings a lot of good insights and some good betting content as well from John. So, John, welcome to the show. How are you making out today?
I'm doing great. I'm doing awesome. Can't wait for finally to hit the ground running. We have real football this weekend, if you like college football. And obviously, you know, not just the Thursday night game. We get that little Friday Brazil teaser as well. So we're here, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. So we've been talking futures bets forever, and we're going to keep on talking about them today. Then we get into the games next week, but we do want to get a feel for what you like coming into this season. So no beating around the bush here, right off the top. We usually save this for the end of a segment, but let's go big. Who do you like beating who in the Super Bowl this season?
You know, it's hard to bet against the Chiefs. I mean, I think they got better this offseason, and I don't see how you couldn't take them to win the Super Bowl until someone knocks them off, because now they've proven they can win on the road. I mean, last year they were underdogs in three straight games in two of the toughest environments in the league, obviously at Buffalo. And that Baltimore team, I mean, last year was Baltimore's year. That team, they had just manhandled San Francisco on Christmas night. Lamar won the MVP. The defense was incredible. And the Chiefs beat them and kind of controlled that game and scored 17 points doing it. And that's the scary part about Kansas City, is their defense is awesome. So anytime in the history of the league you go, we have one of the best defenses in the league with one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, I think you just pick that team over and over until they're proven otherwise. Now it's football. Over the years, the Patriots have been knocked off, but they just have to be your preseason pick, because it doesn't matter what their seed is. They just prove, like, we don't have to just have home playoff games, which I think last year was the first time Patrick Mahomes ever played on the road in the playoffs. Yeah. So then you look at the NFC. I mean, as we're talking right now, the Niners have two of their best players are just not – I mean, one, they're both under contract, but one guy's holding out and one guy is holding in. Now, I don't think they're going to play the season without those guys, but it's been kind of weird. I like the Lions a lot. So to me, I like those two teams. I mean, again, the 49ers have had a weird, weird offseason just because of the holdouts. But I still kind of lean them, assuming those guys come back and are healthy, because of the championship culture, the coach. You know, there are question marks with some of the other contenders. I mean, the Rams kept five undrafted free agents yesterday on defense, you know, and Ernest Jones, who's been a starter for them for a while, they just got rid of because they think these other guys are better. I mean, they're undrafted free agents. Now they draft really well and they've proven to build young defenses, but Stafford's older health. If he missed time, I think they would be in trouble. Question mark still with the Packers defense. The Bears have a rookie quarterback. I'm sure we'll talk about the NFC South. And then to me, the Eagles, I mean, and the Cowboys, the pressure on their coaches.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy, right? So the moment some of those, one of those two teams, which is inevitable in an NFL season, hit a little adversity, all we'll be talking about is the guy going to get fired. So that's the one thing that, like, the McVays, the Shanahans, LaFleur, now Dan Campbell, like, there's no question mark in their job security, right, and who's leading the ship. So I think it's the same cast of characters in the NFC. I'll lean the Niners, but unlike the Chiefs, I mean, I think you could see several teams in the NFC, and I think we have a similar final four, you know, with teams like the Packers, the Rams, and the Lions. I mean, ended up playing last year in the first round, but I think all the same teams are just as good this year. And I think the NFC top to bottom is better than the AFC, you know, that top six, seven teams, which has not been the case the last couple of years.
Yeah, some red flags with the 49ers for sure. I think the Rams are going to be in a lot of fun games. That Sunday night week one game in Detroit, I have already bet the over on that one. That should be a fun game indeed. Okay, so you touched on the NFC South here, and you have a handful of futures bets that you're going to drop on us here. And John's coming with some big bets here, not this minus 110 stuff. So let's talk NFC South, kind of an interesting division. It's kind of been a bit of a shitty division the past couple seasons since Tom Brady left. Let's call it what it is. A lot of hype around the Falcons, deservedly so. You know, new head coach, they paid Kirk Cousins a bunch of money. The thing with Michael Penix, no need really to rehash that. Big trade with the Patriots. So a lot of people are picking them. You know, I'm seeing some people making a case for the Panthers having a big season here as like a popular sleeper bet. I don't really buy that one, but you like the Saints to win the division here at plus 400. Break this one down for us.
I don't know how you could do a minus 110 future bet. I couldn't have my money locked out for a long time.
It's a long season.
I know people do it. When I do future bets, it has to be a little tasty. And I think when you look at the South, the overreaction on Atlanta is kind of crazy to me because they've won seven games, three straight years. Now their quarterback play should be vastly improved, but they have a guy who has been a head coach once in his career and it didn't go well. And now granted he's much older and, you know, obviously the vibes on Raheem Morris are high, but we have no clue if he knows what he's doing as a head coach. And I just think the pressure on Cousins with the weirdness of Penix, I'm just hanging a left when everyone's hanging a right. Like, I'm not saying they're going to be bad, but I'm not picking them, especially when the Saints, who I think if you ask a random person how'd they do last year, most people be, oh, they won 5-6 games. They went 9-8. And their offense the first half of the year was putrid. I mean, it was like the Carolina Panthers. Well, they hire Kubiak from the 49ers, who, like most teams in the NFL now, run the, you know, variation of the Shanahan system, which is easy on the quarterback. And they have some offensive weapons. They have a good running back room. Chris Olave is a really good player. And I just think that their defense, we know, is going to be really good. So you go, the offense is improved. The defense is good. We know it's a tough place to play. I can't imagine them starting as slow as they did last year. I just think that value to me is insane. You know, it should be much lower. They're being treated like they're, you know, much closer to the Carolina Panthers than the reality. So I like the Saints to win that division. And you could make a case for Tampa as well. I mean, they've made the playoffs four straight years. I saw yesterday that their last 2 years, only one guy they drafted did not make the cut. I mean, we know how well they draft. We know how well their older players are. I just think everyone's acting like the Atlanta Falcons are, you know, the Belichick Patriots or the Colts with Peyton Manning. It's like, what are we talking about here? They got Kirk Cousins, who they already had to put Penix on ice, not because like he's red, it's because they didn't want any weirdness. And I think that thing could get weird and it could get weird fast. So I like the Saints basically 4-1.
Yeah, a lot of hype there for the Falcons for sure. Okay, so a team you're really high on here in the AFC, actually love this bet. The Houston Texans came out of this Deshaun Watson thing just fantastically, smelling like roses, right? Hit a home run, grand slam with CJ Stroud. 8-1 to be the number one seed in the AFC. You're quite high on them, right?
Yeah, I think when you look at the AFC as a whole, I think the NFC North is coming back to earth. Or excuse me, the AFC North. So last year, the Ravens were the one seed. Like, I just don't like them as much this year at all. And the difference, you know, I view them more as like a 10-win team. The Bengals have a lot of question marks with Joe Burrow's health. The Browns quarterback situation. Then you look, obviously, Kansas City, but as they proved last year, they're a little like the Kevin Durant Warriors. How serious do they take the regular season? Which could easily be the difference of going 13 or 14 wins and like 11 wins, right? They just, it's hard to focus in those situations, you know? So I just look at the Texans and go, they got dramatically better this offseason. With CJ Stroud, there aren't question marks. Like, will he get hurt running? Well, he doesn't run. He's a pocket quarterback who dominates. So their offensive weaponry, Tank Dell's a stud. Nico Collins is got a chance to be one player that people kind of know about if you're a nerdy football guy, but like everyone's going to know about. The defense is going to be dramatically better. And D'Amico's just a stud. So they have a coach that I couldn't be higher on, a quarterback who I think is just going to establish himself as one of the better players at his position for the next decade. And they have a lot to prove. Like they're just, they have the chip on their shoulder as a team that like we're trying to show everybody. And you look around, like Chiefs aren't going to be as focused just on a week to week basis. And I don't like the Ravens as much. The Bills, I'm a higher on the Bills than most people, but they're not like a 13 or 14 win team. And then you look at the division, like I'm not that high on the Jags. I in theory, I like the Colts, but you watch Anthony Richardson in the preseason.
Yeah.
He can be a little erratic. So like, even if they're a 9-10 win team, if you're the Colts, they're just going to lose some games because he's going to throw some picks, right? Especially in some big spots with the inaccuracy. And, you know, the Titans, I think, are going to be kind of feisty, but there's a difference between being feisty and, you know, winning 6-7 games. So I like the Texans. I think that value is just fantastic at 8-1.
Okay, so you're high on the Texans. That makes a lot of sense. You're also high on the Denver Broncos here, but who isn't high on the Denver Broncos is oddsmakers. A win total of 5.5. That's when I'm all over the over on that one. 7 wins last season, despite all the distractions and bullshit with the Russell Wilson and all that stuff. Now, Sean Payton, this is a guy who has a reputation as a really good regular season head coach. I think this year's team is going to be much more in his vision than the first year, his first year with the team that he inherited here. So you like the Broncos to make a little bit of noise here. You like the situation at quarterback. So let's group these into one. Broncos to make the playoffs coming in at plus 600 and Bo Nix getting a lot of really positive vibe at 10-1 to win offensive rookie of the year. Break down the Broncos for us.
Well, you actually said they won 7 games. They won 8. They won 8 and 9.
Yes.
And I think if you ask, like a lot like the Saints, if you ask most people, people would act like they won 5. So the quarterback situation, again, there's unknown anytime you're playing a rookie quarterback, but he clearly fits Sean Payton's vision. And to me, this isn't – I'm not acting like the Broncos are the 2013 Peyton Manning version here, just a loaded roster. But I don't like the AFC as much. I think Sean Payton really likes this team. And his offense has proven if he gets a guy that can get rid of the ball fast, that it can work. So to me, when you look at this guy, he just wins a lot. And he almost had them above 500 last year with a quarterback he couldn't even stand to look at. And who's proven to be, you know, just not a very good player anymore. Who once was a great player. And he's one of the most, I've seen Russell Wilson live probably 4 or 5 times in my life. He was a spectacular, entertaining player. Just one of the great entertaining players, you know, of the last 20 plus years. But that guy's long gone. And now you have this guy in Bo Nix who can run your offense. They have a solid offensive line. They're going to be able to run the ball. And defensively, if they're just solid, like the Chargers have a lot of question marks. I don't like the Raiders at all. I just think that the if you get to like 9-8, that might get you the 7th seed. So all they'd have to do is win one more game than they did last year, and they would be competitive, have a shot, which, and this goes back to, I just think the AFC is going to be a little more chaotic than it has the last couple years when it's been hard to make the playoffs. You had to get to double-digit wins, like where the NFC had been the opposite. I think that flip-flops this year.
Yeah, Broncos, the first 8 games of their schedule might be the easiest first games of any team in the NFL. So they're going to have a great shot to get off to a fast start.
And that's why, like, you almost have to double down. Like, and I think you could do that with the Texans, too. If you like to get them, if you like the number one seed at 8-1, which I do, you bet CJ Stroud to win the MVP. I think he's like plus 850. Same thing with Bo Nix. Like if you're taking them, if you're going to ride them 6-1 to make the playoffs, because then you're not even betting them to win the division. Obviously you just need them to get a wild card spot. You then immediately bet Bo Nix to win the offensive rookie of the year. Both those two go hand in hand. You could do the same thing. Like if you like the Bills, right, to I would say get the number one seed, which to me, I'm not as confident on. You just immediately bet the quarterback to win the MVP, which I think in the AFC, you can do that with three or four teams pretty easily.
Yeah, it is a regular season award. Okay, so looking at the Super Bowl futures odds board right now, the Broncos, the lowest on the odds board right now. Other teams looked upon poorly. The Panthers make sense. Patriots, Giants, Titans, Commanders, and, of course, the Raiders. I like the Raiders 12-1 to have the worst record in the NFL. But do you think any of those bad teams could be, you know, a feisty underdog pick from week to week, not necessarily, you know, make a push for the playoffs or anything? We know the Broncos, so we won't touch on them. But do you think any of these teams can be a little bit more competitive than they look like they will be on paper?
I think the team that, you know, could potentially finish last in the division that is going to have upset potential just throughout an individual week basis during the season is the Cardinals because of Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a major difference. Like I can't compare the Cardinals to like the Panthers or the Raiders or because of the quarterback. And we saw last year when he came back from the injury late in the season, he is just, he's a tough player. I would imagine to coach for 17 weeks because he's very up and down, but when he's on and he's a guy that he's like a golfer who the first nine holes, he can be like five over. And then all of a sudden you look and he shot two under par. He can just get really hot. And he did that against the Eagles. He did that a couple years ago, I think, against the Raiders in like week two. He had this incredible play to get him to overtime, and then he won the game in overtime. He is just a tough player. And now you add Marvin Harrison. They already have a good tight end. You got James Conner. To me, that's a team that, you know, could end up winning 6-7 games that throughout the course of the season they have beat, you know, the 49ers once, the Rams once, and, you know, another playoff-level team on their schedule just strictly because of him. So, like, to me, the Raiders have good players, right, at individual positions, but the quarterback position, like, I like Gardner Minshew a lot more with Shane Steichen than I do with the Raiders situation.
Yeah, the Raiders, I might be the worst or one of the worst head coach quarterback pairings in the league. I think they kind of got backed into a corner needing to hire Antonio Pierce because they had the interim last time. He gets into the playoffs, they don't hire him, and that backfired badly with Josh McDaniels. And all the players were also kind of putting pressure on the team to bring back Pierce.
I think if they could have a do-over and maybe they were hoping to get Penix or Bo Nix or something like that in the draft, and it clearly didn't break their way, was they signed Christian Wilkins from the Miami Dolphins and obviously the Panthers signed Cousins. I think you would flip-flop those two moves, right? The Raiders would sign Cousins, and then I think we'd like them a lot more. And if I told you Penix was there – and even what they traded for Judon, they had Wilkins. You would like the Atlanta Falcons. Like that, to me, then I would be much more intrigued there. Like, okay, their defensive line's really good. They got this young quarterback who's a plug-and-play guy. I think that's one. If you could get a do-over, they would flip-flop those two players whose contracts. Wilkins got a little less guaranteed, but it was, you know, 10-ish million off. So I think that's one that they would like back for sure.
Okay, yeah, interesting thought there. Okay, so we talked some bad teams that might be able to make a little bit of noise here from week to week. What about the top of the odds board here? We have 10, 11 teams inside the 20-1 range to win the Super Bowl. Now, we know you like the Chiefs. You mentioned the Lions as well. The Ravens, some turnover at defensive coordinator. A lot of people don't like that. The Bengals, can Joe Burrow stay healthy? We know you like the Texans. The Bills a little bit too. Do you think any of these top teams that are expected to get into the playoffs and make a push towards the Super Bowl could fall flat and maybe not even finish 500?
Yeah, to me, it'd be the Bengals if something, you know, Burrow's injury is still a pretty big question mark.
Yeah.
The odds of the Bills and the Jets to me is a little funny just based on the Bills have dominated this division over the last half decade, right? And they've had a lot of random guys come in and out. And for the Jets to be put on the same plane, and I even think I saw yesterday the Jets have a little bit better odds to win the division. Seems crazy to me.
Insane.
I mean, Sean McDermott takes a lot of heat. And if you want to be critical of him in the playoffs, but the regular season, the dude's just winning. I mean, last year they were 6-6, and the Dolphins, had like a 4 or 5 game lead. And then what happened when the dust settled?
I know.
Bills won the division. So it's just like, I can't bet against the Bills. And I think with the Super Bowl odds, you know, that's one where I have a hard time doing like long flyers. There's probably only 7-8 teams that can do it. Now, if Burrow's healthy, they could be a problem. Obviously, Josh Allen, you know, it's hard for me even to say Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, because if their defense is a little worse, he has not proven that he can throw in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we don't like him as much to get the number one seed this year, that's 3 playoff games just to get to the Super Bowl. And you have to throw, you know, you can't just run around. And he does it. He's gotten a lot better at it during the regular season in the playoffs. Even that first half in that Houston Texans game, you went, God, this is that couple years ago Lamar. And then he figured it out. But that Texans team wasn't as good. And the Chiefs game was just an abomination. So yeah. It's to me, the Chiefs, the Texans, Josh Allen, the Bills. I think they're, this is what I'm saying about the AFC. I don't feel as good, where you could make the case in the NFC 5-6 deep. You know, if Stafford's healthy and that defense comes together, obviously the Rams, you could make a case for, you know, the Packers defense, which is a major question mark. Their defense hasn't been good going back from the heyday of Aaron Rodgers. And it's always been their downfall after 2010, right? The 49ers took advantage of it several times over the last with Kyle and with Jim Harbaugh, because their defense just does not play well. So and then if they do get home playoff games, it's so cold that their explosive offense is kind of irrelevant, because it's a lower scoring game and their defense always screws up. So I got question marks with the Packers, though I like them. And that's where the Lions, the Lions, if they get the number one seed, would be very, very hard to beat, right? Because one, they'd only have to obviously win the 2 games, but how loud it is there, you know, I don't think they'd lose that game if they played like they did against the 49ers if that game's at home.
Yeah, that's a good thought you had on the Bengals and Joe Burrow. You know, it's been a bit all or nothing during the Joe Burrow era. 4 seasons, 2 of them, he went down with the season and an injury. The other 2, they get to the Super Bowl, they get to the AFC title game. So it all kind of, it's all kind of on his shoulders here. Okay, John, so we covered a lot here. We talked about a lot of teams. Let's end with this. What is your absolute hottest take, boldest prediction, betting or otherwise, going into the season here?
That's a pretty good question. I would say my hottest take, probably, that most people push back on, is the Saints.
Yeah.
You know, I like the Saints a lot. I mean, I think they're going to be really good. And there's a difference between, like, and this is the argument, you know, the Broncos go 8-9 or the Saints go 9-8. They're, just because your record actually isn't that bad doesn't mean like you weren't actually that good. I think they're going to be good. And I feel much more confident them than the Broncos. You know, I still got a lot of question marks about just, you know, the Broncos defensive unit. Anytime you have a rookie quarterback, Derek Carr's proven, like, he's kind of established himself where he is, right? He's not a top 10 quarterback. He's clearly better than most. But if you can protect him, and if you play good defense and have a solid offensive line, like, he can get you double-digit wins. He's done it a couple times with the Raiders, which is, like, one of the most chaotic franchises in the history of sports. So I do like the Saints a lot, which is crazy, because I'm essentially betting on Derek Carr and Dennis Allen. You know, I think in most sports, if you go, this is your coach and this is your most important player, and there are question marks, but I feel pretty strongly about that. I'm not picking them to win the Super Bowl. Who knows, maybe depending on who their matchup is, if they make the playoffs, but not even say they're going to win a playoff game. But I love that bet. I really do. Partly because, like you said, a lot of these odds, you know, you feel confident. You got to bet. What are the Jets to win the division? Like +150? Yeah. I mean, they haven't made the playoffs ridiculous. In like 15 years. And they're +150. The Saints team, they have a lot of these guys, like core guys, that have been on some of the great Sean Payton's teams that gave Tom Brady fits. Like, a lot of the guys know how to win. You got the Jets, which a bunch of older injured guys, a bunch of young guys that have never done anything that we like as talents. And Robert Saleh, who can't even dream of being over .500 as a head coach. And they're +150. And this team, especially in a division with good coaches, Sean McDermott, Mike McDaniel. And it's like, I got the NFC South 4-1. I think it's the best odds on the board it's better odds than like even the Texans plus 800 to get the number one seed, because that is a huge jump, right? That number probably should be like 12-1, you know. So I think it's the best odds by far on the board of any team to like win a division when you look through, you know, the eight divisions.
Yeah, I haven't heard a whole lot of people make a case for the Saints, so that absolutely
no one does
qualify as a hot take, right? So that's what a hot take is, I guess. And I'm happy to hear it seems like we are aligned on the New York Jets. My favorite bet going into the season, Jets not to make the playoffs, plus 145. So next week, we're going to have you back, talk a little week one, see what some of your favorite bets are on the board there. I'm going to get your thoughts on those New York Jets, maybe talk about my Miami Dolphins a little bit, see what your expectations for them are going into the season. I listened to your podcast, so I know you weren't too high on them paying Tua all that money. So we can discuss that a little bit next week. But John, thank you very much for coming on here. Great debut on Before You Bet, and we look forward to having you on next week and beyond.
Talk to you soon. Have a good week.
Yes, sir. All right. The man right there, John Middlecoff. With these segments, sometimes it's like, okay, we'll have this guy on for 15 minutes. We'll do this guy for 10, this guy for 12. John, he's got a lot of great insights there. So let's let the guy talk. A 25-minute segment there with John. Some great thoughts coming into the season from him. And we will look forward to his bets from week to week, and also his thoughts on the biggest storylines throughout the NFL. Okay, guys, about 1,000 live viewers watching right now across YouTube and X. If you're watching for the first time, hit that subscribe button right down there. If you're not subscribed, hit the subscribe button right down there as well. We have a lot of great content coming up for the NFL, college football, baseball playoffs right around the corner, NBA season right around the corner. And of course, we're always covering the UFC, the PGA, everything that there is to cover in the world of sports betting. Okay, we're not leaving you baseball bettors hanging, so let's get right into it. Let's bring in the man with the sexiest smile in all the sports betting. No, that is not Paul Skeens.
Oh,
that is our very own Josh Ingles. Jingles, how are we making out?
I just put bricks on the Saints. Middlecoff absolutely making me running through a wall for Carr and Dennis Allen.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm totally buying the hype on the Falcons there. I think they got off to a really bad start by paying Kirk Cousins all that money. Then you go out and draft Michael Penix. So, yeah, maybe the vibes not as high as they should be. But, yeah, very pumped for NFL. But let's talk a little bit Major League Baseball. So, great day on Monday. Bad day yesterday. So, we are looking to bounce back. We have six bets between the two of us. We got some afternoon action. So let's start things off in Cleveland, the Kansas City Royals in town. Michael Wacha on a roll here for Kansas City. I'm going to take him to continue that roll. Under 2.5 earned runs for him, coming in at minus 130 on an absolute roll right now. Two or fewer earned runs allowed in five straight and in seven of his last eight on the road. Great success for him versus this Cleveland lineup as well. Cleveland hitters combining for a 533 OPS against him. 48 combined at-bats, just two extra base hits for the Guardians. And bring it all together. Cleveland ice cold right now versus right-handed pitching, 27th in OPS over the last 2 weeks. The Guardians kind of falling apart at the wrong time of the season on a 3-9 slide.
Royals
right now,
are pushing. The bank Royals a little bit. Are pushing. Let's go, Royals.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have we seen the Guardians or the former Indians, the Twins get into the playoffs and do jack shit? Let's get some new blood in there, the Kansas City Royals. Let's go. Okay, I'm going to follow that one up. Then we'll go to you, Jingles, and go back and forth a bit. Do we have any Osvaldo Beto fans or Beto fans watching the show here today? You can tell how big of a fan I am. I don't even know how to pronounce his last name, but I do like this bet quite a bit. It was at 5.5 at open the morning here. That was at plus money around plus 140. I like that. And of course, I like this one even better here. Over 4.5 strikeouts for Beto. He's on a pretty good run here. Probably the best stretch of his career. He's hit six strikeouts in five of his last six starts, including games versus the Dodgers and the Astros. And it's been a breakout month for him, a 1.17 ERA across four starts. 89 or more pitches for him in all four of those games. So don't be surprised to see him go deeper into this game. And Cincinnati striking out at a high percentage versus right-handed pitching, 28.5% over the last 2 weeks. A's and Reds in Cincinnati. A lot of excitement for that one. And, of course, a lot of excitement for this Marlins series in Colorado. Quite the attendance records I think they're setting for the Rockies there. But Kyle Freeland, if you're tuning into that game and maybe you want to tail a bet, Kyle Freeland on the bump here for the Rockies. What do you like or not like for him?
No, shout out to Nick Newport Jr. as always, forever Royal. Big fan for that number one seed. Need some bricks there for that one to get through. But you saw it. I mean, you mentioned it, Joe. It's an ugly series. Nobody wants to bet it, and that's usually where there's value to be hidden. Kyle Freeland under 17.5 outs, minus 118. The market is falling. His strikeouts are falling. Yes, it's versus Miami. We get it. We've seen it through the whole series. Kyle Quantrill didn't get his 18 outs despite a pretty decent start. I think he ended up walking five guys. So he's coming off the best edge here with this Kyle Freeland play is he's coming off a season-high 106 pitches. Now, to put that into perspective, he was averaging 82.5 pitches per start over his last 10 starts. That is a massive upgrade. Then you add in Coors, where he actually has a better ERA, which is slightly unsustainable from where it is. So he projects for 15.7, where he's 3-0 at Coors in his last three starts. Give me the under 17.5 outs. Yes, I know I said it's the Marlins. They're not good, but you wouldn't be surprised if they kind of reeled him back to maybe 80 to 85 pitches today just because of that 106 pitch outing, which was substantially more than his previous starts.
Wouldn't that suck being like a phenom young pitcher, a guy in high school, one of the best in the country, and draft day rolls around the Colorado Rockies? When is the last time the Rockies had a bona fide ace? Who sticks out to you? I remember they paid Mike Hampton once upon a time. They gave him a bunch of money.
That's where his career went to that. Higher rated, like one of the highest rated guys they've had.
Yeah, some bad luck with that one, by the way. If any of you guys tailed the walk parlay, Quantrill was supposed to be the hard leg of it. Five walks. Mike Lorenzen going for the Royals. He was the easy leg of it, minus 200 on his. He comes out, walks one in the first inning, then he gets injured in the second. And they yanked him from the game. Nick Newport Jr., Mike Hampton, 100 milli. Yeah, they got to pay, guys. You got to be desperate to go to, we're not desperate. You got to like money. You got to overpay for, what's that?
Yeah, quick Google search gives me Ubaldo Jimenez as the best pitcher in Rockies history, followed by Jorge De La Rosa and Mike Hampton. And yeah, it's an ugly, ugly list.
Yeah, there's a stupid franchise too. You get rid of Arenado and his money, then you bring in Chris Bryant, who's nowhere to be seen. Except for on the D. Like, what are... it's just moronic. Anyhow, let's get back to the bets here. Yankees taking on the Nationals tonight. Mackenzie Gore on the bump, having a tough second half. We're going to be fading him, taking over 5.5 hits allowed, minus 110 on this one. So he's been rocked for 7 or more hits in 5 of his last 6 starts. Taking on a really good Yankees offense, and I think the Yankees are due for some added success versus left-handed pitching, generating plenty of runs versus lefties, but batting average and balls in play of just .218 over the last 2 weeks, despite ranking 6 in hard contact percentage. So I think they'll rip him around the ballpark here tonight. What I like about this bet, no urgency from the Nationals to yank Gore early, despite his struggles. It's pretty clear this guy's just out there to eat innings. They want to get 5 innings out of this guy or close to 100 pitches. He's reached 5 or more innings pitched in 5 of his last 6, so we'll take him to allow more than 5.5 hits against the Yankees. Next up, a game we were talking about yesterday, the Orioles and Dodgers. Looks like a sexy pitching matchup here, at least on the Orioles side. Corbin Burnes going up against that Dodgers lineup. Now, the Orioles all beat the shit right now. They're not really hitting. They're not really slumping too much, though. A decent win for them yesterday. I think it was, a 3-2 victory. Burnes against this Dodgers lineup. How do you foresee this one going?
We were on Flaherty under 17.5 plus 120 yesterday. We were basically one batter away, coin flippish, to get it. Finished with 99 pitches and 18 outs. But Corbin Burnes, tough spot here, under 17 outs at a big number at plus 140. There's a reason why Tarik Skubal is not pitching well, but still in the command of the AL Cy Young. That's because Corbin Burnes has not been good of late. So first you just start with the matchup, which is obviously priced in, but then you add in 10-mile-an-hour winds blowing out. That's not going to help Burnes. And he's been absolutely awful over his last four starts, an 8.71 ERA, and he's given up a ton of hits. They might not be extra base hits, but 29 hits allowed his last 20 innings, four starts. So there's an issue there with his contact. He projects for 15.8 outs from the cover's projections via the bat, and it's making it one of the best plus EV outs recorded on the board. And you hear me keep talking about it. So many paths to the under, more so than the over, and at plus 140 for Burnes, especially with where the playoff race is. If there's any issues in this game and if things are getting ugly, pull the plug on Burnes and go to a bullpen that has a lot of relievers ready and ready to go, especially their high leverage guys.
Okay, right back to the wall for me as we wrap things up for the MLB section at Fenway Park. So I was on the Blue Jays team total 4.5 yesterday. Not really a bad beat, but maybe some bad luck. They had 14 base runners and they only scored 3 runs in that one. So maybe I'm due a little bit of luck here tonight. So hopefully it does find me with some of these bets. We're going over 9 in this one, minus 112. So both of these teams absolutely smacking right-handed pitching right now, each ranking in the top 5 in OPS over the last 2 weeks. Chris Bassett on the mound here for Toronto. And he's just been awful since the start of July, a 6.80 ERA across 9 starts. Bello on the mound here for the Red Sox, and the Blue Jays have owned him an OPS of over 1,061 combined at-bats. They did rock him for 7 runs back at the end of June there. And I'll bring it up again. Boston's bullpen absolutely blows 29th in ERA over the last 2 weeks. Blue Jays bullpen, you take a look at, get into some analytics here. The Blue Jays bullpen really struggling on the road, 29th in FIP since the All-Star break. So plenty of ammo for a double-digit score game there in Boston. Okay, Jingles, we will wrap that up. We've got some golf to get into, but we will be right back with you tomorrow, and we will recap these picks, which I sometimes forget to do, but we got to get in the habit of doing. Michael Wacha, under 2.5 earned runs. Osvaldo Baido, over 4.5 strikeouts. Mackenzie Gore, over 5.5 hits allowed. And that Red Sox Blue Jays over 9. And for you, Freeland under 17.5 outs. And Burnes under 17.5 outs. A bet type that you have liked very much. Plus 140 there for Burnes. All right, buddy. We will leave it at that. And we will catch you again. Oh, tell the people what you're doing here. Paul Skeens on the mound this afternoon.
Oh, I just gave up a double. I am. I put my money where my mouth is. So I bet the Paul Skeens under 6.5 strikeouts. I really think that leash is coming down. Velocity, especially early pitch velocity, is coming down. I'm gonna eat a hot dog for every time Paul Skeens strikes somebody out, so it could go both ways. I could lose a full unit and have to eat 8-9 hot dogs. That is in the cards. The game is going right now. He went 0-1 first batter. I believe that was Ian Happ, leadoff double. So good start there. I'll try to document the monstrosity of what's gonna happen, but I could look foolish here today, Joe.
Well, are you rigging it? Like, what kind of hot dogs? What type of buns? Are
regular,
these
big? Just a plain Jane, bud. Some Red Hots and some Wonder Bread buns. That's as easy as it gets.
I remember at a previous spot that I worked at, a couple of fellas had a hot dog eating competition to celebrate the 4th of July contest. And the girl who was in charge of getting the supplies, she gets the big, thick-ass buns that are probably like a good 300 calories each. And totally, like, each guy got through like 3.5 hot dogs. It was embarrassing, but those buns had a lot to do with it, unfortunately. So, yeah, you got to think ahead here when you're slamming these dogs. But good luck to you on the bet. Hope you're not eating too many hot dogs, and we'll catch you again here tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it, pal.
Yes, sir. Okay. Moving right along here. About to wrap up the Tour Championship PGA. Guys, make sure you hit that subscribe button, the like button, rate down there. It's football season, and we're going to be all over it here at Covers, but we're not leaving you hanging with the other sports, and that includes golf, the PGA, the Tour Championship at the East Lake Golf Course in Atlanta, and we welcome back Neil Parker. Neil, how are you making out?
Good, buddy. Tough to follow up. Jingles in the hot dog antics, and I'm a Cubbies fan, so I'm right on board with him. The Cubs are rolling, and I actually got them on the money line in my pick this today for the afternoon tilt, and I think they're going to get to the rookie of the year candidate there, Skeens, and have a good day. So I love the Cubbies this afternoon.
All right, Neil. So if you were in an eating competition and you got to pick the food, what food item would you pick?
Oh, I'm a light eater. I have trouble with keeping in shape as it is, buddy. So I would definitely go something like I could pound back some chicken wings for sure. But you know, I try to mix in a salad if I can.
I don't think you'd get a lot of positive attention if you did a salad eating competition. Yeah. I would choose donuts. That donuts? Would be a lot of fun. I can throw some donuts back.
Creams or what?
They're a little thick. Probably go with a chocolate glaze or something like that. You know, if it's volume eating, you know what I mean? You got to keep the calories down as much as possible. Okay, so the Tour Championship, you got three bets for us per usual. Xander Schauffele, you like him to win outright. He's on an incredible roll right now. Great form. So Xander Schauffele to win outright with bonus strokes, plus 250. Explain this to me. As a golf casual, the with bonus strokes, what does that mean?
Well, this final event at East Lake is set up so that every player essentially has a handicap going in. Scottie Scheffler's in the lead. He's leading the FedEx Cup standings. He's minus 10. Schauffele is minus 8. So he's only two strokes back with 72 holes to play across 4 days. That's enough time for him to leapfrog Scheffler and also pull away from the rest of the field. So that's what that means with the handicap. Now, there are other markets, but Schauffele doesn't necessarily need to beat the entire field in this case, right? He just needs to essentially leapfrog Scottie Scheffler and beat the other top contenders. And I think he can do that. As you mentioned, he's on just an incredible run. And he won here in 2017. He's followed that up with six consecutive top tens. That includes three runner-ups and two more top fives. He's top five in both of the FedEx Cup playoff events so far this season. And statistically, he's just absolutely phenomenal. Gained true strokes across the board for the season, each of his past four events, and his past 10 tournaments have just been incredible. He's top 10 in all five true stroke gain metrics during that 10 tournament stretch, including ranking second in true strokes gained tee to green and true strokes gained putting. So like I said, he's minus 8. He's two back of Scheffler. Give him 72 holes across 4 days. I like him to close that gap and win the Tour Championship and his first ever FedEx Cup.
Okay, finish strong. Okay, so a head-to-head here, Shane Lowry. You like him. Break this one down for us as well.
Yeah, this is more a bet against Sahith Theegala. His current form is terrible. He finished T46 at the St. Jude, and then last week he lost true strokes across the board to finish dead last in the BMW. In this 30-man field, Theegala ranks 28th in both true strokes gained tee to green and on approaches across his past three events. And simply put, Joe, there's just nothing simple about Theegala's game right now. I don't anticipate him turning it around at East Lake. This will be just the second time he's teed it here. And he finished 26th in the 30-man field in true strokes gained tee to green in that 2022 start at East Lake. And Lowry, meanwhile, is a well-rounded player, and he rebounded last week at the BMW. He gained true strokes across the board, and he ranked 16th in this field in true strokes gained tee to green and 12th in true strokes gained putting across his past 10 tournaments. His game plays everywhere, so while it is a debut at East Link, I am expecting Shane Lowry to just continue playing really well, put up another good score, and Theegala to continue struggling. There's a lot going wrong with his game right now.
Okay, let's wrap things up with Patrick Cantlay. Cantlay or Cantlay? Cantlay?
Can't lay for me.
I'm a casual. I'm not going to get up here and pretend, guys. You know, I watch the big tournaments. But yeah, this is a name that's come up a couple times on the show here. You like him to have a good showing this weekend. Tell us why.
Yeah, just Thursday. This is a round one bet, 68.5. That's 3 under par. So he won here in 2021 on route to winning the FedEx Cup Championship. And he enters this week's tournament in excellent form. He has 5 straight top 25s, ranks 5th in true strokes gained tee to green, 6th in true strokes gained putting. And he followed up that 2021 win with a T7 and a solo 5th in his past 2 stops. And his scoring average over the 3-tournament stretch here at East Link is 67.67. So one of the angles that I'm seeing here that I don't think is fully being priced in is that East Link was always a stock par 70. That means 2 par 5s. And now there's a 3rd par 5 on the card. So it's a par 71. That's an extra scoring opportunity for Cantlay. He ranks 6th in par 5 scoring on PGA Tour this season. And he also is 11th in round 1 scoring. So I like him to go 3 deep or better and have a really good opening round on Thursday.
Okay, there you have it. Neil's 3 best bets for the Tour Championship this weekend. Neil, tell the people a little bit more about your work at Covers and where they can find it.
Yeah, just right there. Neil Parker Betts on the X or Twitter machine. And yeah, so we'll kick into some NHL hockey in the coming months. Still picking away at the MLB. A little moonlighting in some NFL action too. So that's good. And yeah, so really a smorgasbord of sports betting content for me. And the big thing about this tournament, Joe, the Tour Championship's tricky, right? It's only a 30-man field. The odds are really, they're tight, you know, so don't be afraid to maybe go a little easier on your unit size if you want. I've been very conservative with my recommendations this week just because it's a unique tournament and the top players in the world over the last decade have a lot of experience here where players who haven't been as successful are kind of debuting. And it is a demanding track. It's why you see Schauffele, Cantlay, Rory McIlroy play here well year in, year out. So just something to think about, my man.
Yeah, always good to lower your stake when there's a lot of question marks regardless of the sport. Okay, Neil, thanks again for joining. Best of luck with those bets, and we will catch you again next time.
Can't wait, buddy. 8 days a week. You're doing a great job, buddy. Talk soon.
Yes, sir. Now working 8 days a week here with football season here. Absolutely love it. Can't wait to the game. Sick of talking futures here. It's fun. But let's get to the games here next week in the NFL. We got a lot of games this week for college football starting tomorrow. And you're going to want to tune in to tomorrow's show because we have another big guest who will be making weekly appearances here. His name is Jake Butt. He is a former tight end for the Michigan Wolverines. He's a former draft pick of the Denver Broncos, does great work with the Big Ten Network. So he's going to be on the show every Thursday, lending some insights to the college game, of course. We'll get his opinion on some stuff going on in the NFL as well. So you're not going to want to miss that. And of course, we're going to have the usual Major League Baseball betting coverage tomorrow. And we will finish the week strong on Friday. Brad Powers will be back then. Brad was with us on Monday. If you missed that appearance, it's here on the Covers YouTube channel. Go to the live section. He breaks down some plays that he loves here for week 1. So you will want to check that out. Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed the show. We're trying to build a little bit of a community here. So if you're watching the replay, hit up that comment section right down there. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know what you're excited about for the NFL season. Let us know what some of your favorite plays are, regardless of the sport. Thank you guys for tuning in. Best of luck with your bets, and we will catch you again tomorrow.